It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, enough of this brilliant chatter that we're not recording. That's sickening. Where'd my... Oh, good. I thought I lost my burrito. Ah! Kitten! No. Ugh. Hi, kitten. Did you want to come get some snuggles?
So funny when you call such a large
in
cat.
In the middle of recording. That's a terrible time. You had to climb up on Dad. I have friends who are very opposed to the... my cats are my children thing. And I'm not self-conscious about it at all, because we anthropomorphize them in all sorts of other ways. And they do too. Like, they'll make voices for their cats and shit. I'm like, why does it matter that they're my kids? Like, Dad, Mom, and they're always siblings. I mean, in most cases, they're adopted, but, you know. Yeah. Tigger and Grey Boy were actual siblings, but... so, yeah, that's Ezzie's little brother, and this is her big brother. And I find it funny, though, because when we're specifying the cats individually, they have names. Mm-hmm. And when we're specifying them as a group, they're cats. So that's the group, our cats. But we have subsets for each twosome that are things. So Addie and Twiglet are obviously the boy kitties. And Twiglet and Ezzie are the senior kitties, because they are the two oldest. But Addie and Ezzie are the junior kitties, because they are the two youngest.
Wow, Ezzie gets to be in two groups.
Right? Well, everybody gets to be in two groups, but Ezzie specifically gets to be a senior kitty and a junior kitty, and I find that hilarious. No, because back in the day, it was, when we had Grey Boy, it was the boy kitties and the striped kitties and the gray kitties, because Ezzie is both striped and gray. But yeah, so now she's both a senior and a junior cat. I'm worried about my... Is it editing on correctly? Yeah, it is. Okay. Sorry about that, folks. My little display wasn't doing its thing. I think it's because I have the sound deafening aspects of a cat.
Yeah. On me here. Just sucks the sound right in.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Cat podcast. No, wait. Magical Talking Hat podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The only podcast in the world that has a junior kitty and a senior kitty that are the same kitty. Like that Cartoon Network show Uncle Grandpa. I don't know anything about it, and I don't want to. Right. But the main character is called Uncle Grandpa. And I'm like, so, it's a show about incest. It's a cartoon children's show
about
incest.
Honestly, don't think too much about it.
I'm Tony, and this is Twiglet.
And I'm William. This is episode 402. Our 8th annual Thanksgiving episode.
Yes.
Now, we've had an episode on just about every holiday, Christmas included. But we don't always have one on other holidays. But every single year we have one on Thanksgiving because of the Thursday show.
Long-term listeners will remember that William is bizarrely and inordinately excited about the fact.
I do. I love it.
That we always have a Thanksgiving show because it's on Thursday.
Yep. I think that's awesome. I like it whenever we have a show on any holiday, but, you know, like I said, we sometimes have it on this holiday and sometimes on that holiday, but it's always on Thanksgiving. So it's like our holiday is Thanksgiving. Our holiday is Thanksgiving.
I thought our holiday was St. Patrick's Day, because that's when we started.
Right, but we always have a show on Thanksgiving. So it's our thing. Like,
I wondered what our thing was.
It's 8 years, so it's like this is a tradition for some people listening to our podcast
with their families.
Well, even around the fire. Even if they don't listen to it on Thanksgiving, if they out listen to it like the following on Black Friday, that's still tradition.
And I've been pushing this the last couple of years. It absolutely should become a tradition that your family that doesn't listen to the podcast sits around and you all listen to the podcast. And then the traditional, at the end of the podcast, you telling them, it's not always like this. And
you've only heard 8 episodes.
And you know you're lying because it is always like this. It doesn't get better.
Yeah, I just think it's cool, that's all. That we have a thing.
Yes. It's good to have a thing. The history of the placement of Thanksgiving gets weird. It's always been November, and it's always been a Thursday. But it has moved. Now it is the fourth Thursday, but for a while it was whatever the last Thursday was.
Because sometimes there's 5 Thursdays.
And it was very much tied into shopping. I forget the specifics. But
well, now, before it was Lincoln, right? Lincoln instituted Thanksgiving in November?
I don't know for sure.
Well, anyway, before it was instituted as a specific holiday in November, there were Thanksgiving.
People were thankful before that.
Well, they would hold Thanksgiving feasts, and it would just be whenever they wanted.
Yeah, whenever they felt thankful.
Yeah, it wasn't really a thing that happened like at a specific time of the year. But then I think it was Lincoln. Someone had the idea, well, we should, as a nation, like pick a time and stick with it. And that's what they did. Well, I think it was Lincoln. It was after the Civil War and the whole thing, and he wanted. It was supposed
that
to,
would make sense.
Supposed to be some conciliatory thing, and you're right.
It was somebody like Teddy Roosevelt or something, or maybe it was FDR. I mean, because the thing is, there were economic reasons why it got moved.
Yeah.
That were kind of dumb, and then it got moved back, or I don't remember. Somebody else look it up. Speaking of Thanksgiving. Remember Iron Chef?
Well, I mean, you've talked.
I've talked a lot about Iron Chef. So, the Cooking Channel is showing Iron Chef America, and they show it a lot. And I don't care so much for Iron Chef America, but lately I've been turning to that because there are sometimes, particularly Saturday night, there's nothing on TV Saturday night. It's weird. But they'll show it, and sometimes I just sort of want something on, like I'm doing something else, but I want it on. And so I was watching some lately, and they're having the Iron Chef America episodes are not that great. But then I did something else, and I came back and I turned it back on, and this episode of Iron Chef, not Iron Chef America, is Japanese, but the Iron Chef in question, who's called Iron Chef Japanese, is not the guy who was Iron Chef Japanese. And the voice of the person who's the reporter on the floor is a woman and was always a man. And I don't recognize the announcer voice. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? And I look it up. And apparently in 2012, the Fuji Network decided to reboot the show.
Okay.
And they had 3 new Iron Chefs that were not the same ones they had before. And they had a new actor playing the chairman, but he's playing the same character. It was just a different guy, and he was noticeably younger. So I found that weird. Cause like in the American one, they got an actor to pretend to be his nephew. Mm. And so that's what this was. And there weren't that many, there were like 20 episodes or something, and it did not do well. And so then they killed it again. Mm. But so I was watching this, but it was still fun just to be watching that long. Because the big thing is, it's not very risky in the American one. They don't do crazy shit. And like, I was watching the Japanese one, and it was battle cheese, and there was a lot of cheeses involved. And one of the guys took camembert cheese, liquefied it, put it in a syringe, and injected it into oysters. And this was like the beginnings of one of his dishes. Like, holy shit. I'm not saying I'd want to eat that, but, like, that's something. And then, just to drive it home, and this is where my segue finally pays off. Right after that
Are
was...
Are you sure it will?
I mean, pays off.
You sound pretty confident.
Coming up is the point that explains, roughly,
why
I said, speaking of Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And this is what the thing that pissed me off most about these episodes is, so it was the episode of Iron Chef America, and the secret ingredient was Thanksgiving.
That's an ingredient?
Well, it was all the motherfucking ingredients. It was like there were turkeys, there were sweet potatoes, there was like corn, like everything. I'm like, that's not an ingredient. You're just saying make Thanksgiving dinner. And that's what, and you know, they're chefs. They made it in cool, but it's Thanksgiving dinner. I'm like, that's not, that's the thing. There's shit like battle hamburger, where literally just ground beef was the secret ingredient. Battle pizza dough. I wanted to punch my television. I'm like, that's not a thing. Meanwhile, the original show is having shit like, you know, the secret ingredient is Tokyo X, which is actually a very specific and hard to get breed of pig that, like, their pork is, you know, battle bell pepper, you know, things like that. And people like making desserts out of bell pepper. Battle natto. The secret ingredient was fermented soybeans, which even very few Japanese people can stand to eat. Like, and that, all the dishes had to be that. Dude made a dessert out of fermented soybeans. Like, it's crazy. Battle salmon. And one of the chefs made salmon roe ice cream. Apparently it was gross, but he made it. Like, that was interesting. Not this bullshit. Yeah, Battle Thanksgiving. Yeah, my family has Battle Thanksgiving every Thanksgiving. It's my mother-in-law and any one of her daughters brave enough to go in there. Like, this is not... I don't need your TV show for that, Mark Dacascos. Stop fucking around.
You know, one day when we're not doing this anymore...
I don't understand what you're saying.
And if it's not because I'm dead, which is probably going to happen for us not to be doing this anymore.
I could die first.
No, like, don't, please don't.
You
do that.
Will carry on the podcast if I die first.
No, I won't.
It's going to be in my will and everything.
Well, that's too bad.
Oh, denying a dying man's wish.
For a long time. For a long time after, every Thursday I'll think about it. But then when I stop thinking about it every Thursday, I'll still think about it every Thanksgiving.
Oh.
That's the thing. I might still also think about it every St. Patrick's Day.
I think you'll keep thinking about it every Thursday for the rest of your life, because I don't think you got a lot going on.
No, I'm
like,
sure.
What else are you going to think about on a Thursday?
Other things. But Thanksgiving, I'll always think about it. It's gonna be a thing I always think about for Thanksgiving for the rest of my life, for
I'm
sure.
I'm thankful that bastard died, and I don't
no,
have to do that.
You better not do that
anymore.
You better not do
that. Well, that's the only reason I can see why we would stop.
Like, I might die.
I'll keep doing it. Well, also, okay. Not to put too fine a point on it.
You keep doing it.
But then, if you die, you probably won't remember it every Thanksgiving.
No, that's probably true. That's what I said. Unless it ends because I die, I'll remember it every Thanksgiving.
This is what I'm saying. This won't come up. Because unless it ends because you die, and apparently if I die because you're like, fuck that guy's dying wish.
You aren't going to make... That's not going to be your dying wish.
I'm making it right now. I'm dying. We're all dying. It's going to happen.
That's not
fair
because no matter what, I can say whatever I want, but you know I'm not going to feel like I can deny a dying man's wish. You know that about me.
That's what makes this hilarious.
It's not funny.
It's super funny.
No, it isn't.
Oh, my God. You're going to be so pissed off. You're like, I've never worked with this software.
I'm not taking this seriously.
I have nothing to say.
No, forget it.
It's like...
But if you
welcome to Magical Talking Head Podcast, it's the only podcast that's dead fucker made me do.
If you put it in your will, I will hate you.
5 minutes,
even though
long.
You're dead, because I'll feel like I have to do it for real, even though you don't even really mean it.
Well, it's sealed away in a safe, so.
Because a last man or woman's dying wish, I can't not do it.
Funkin' Wagnall's porch.
Who cannot do that?
People can.
They can just ignore someone's dying wish.
They are terrible.
I mean, if someone's dying wish was for you to murder somebody, that's different. But if if what they're asking for isn't immoral or fundamentally impossible, you'd have to do it.
Well, there are two reasons why you do it. One is people who genuinely think there's like an afterlife, and so they think the other person will know.
Which I don't.
And like that's shitty. Like no, they're going to know, and then they're going to be pissed at me, and that's not good. But then there's the people who just are like, it's a dick move not to do it.
Okay, here's the thing.
But the thing is, whenever there's a compelling reason, and that reason is just, it's a dick move, there are people out there who don't worry about
that. I suppose. But you know that I don't have any superstitions about death or dead people or anything else. However, I won't walk on a person's grave. I will respect someone's dying wish. The reason, and I want a person's corpse to be respected. Not that I think there's anything there, or you're gonna be haunted if you don't. The reason I think it's an overextension of my. I have sort of an obsessive thing about honoring someone's consent. Right? So this person's not here anymore. They're not going to care. But I'm sure they had wishes. And I think they should be respected even if they're dead. So one of the reasons why I think someone should respect a grave or a corpse is because without the person's will to tell me what they want, I'm going to think, well, I'm going to do the most considerate thing just to be safe. And so that's why I try to respect graves, and you know, I don't like hearing about corpses being treated badly, because I know the person's dead, but when they were alive, they had an idea of how their mortal remains would be handled and treated, and I don't know what that is, so I'm going to assume the most, you know, by our culture standards anyway, the most careful and respectful thing, because I don't think a ghost is going to haunt me if I don't honor a dead person's wishes. I just feel like you that's just rude. I guess it's just rude. Why would you be so rude?
If you don't continue the podcast, I'm going to haunt the shit out of you. No, I'm glad you bring this up, though, because I want to talk about corpses.
It's just rude.
I've learned things about corpses recently.
Okay.
That I don't want to share because I find it interesting. So, I know somebody whose mother died not quite a year ago.
Okay.
And the other day, they say to me, they're going through, they had taken time to process it, but they were doing kind of okay now. But they said they were having some issue now because their mom came back, which I'm immediately like, what? This is a different conversation than I would expect. But no, I had forgotten, they had said before, because a combination of factors resulted in them donating the mother's body to science.
Mm-hmm.
What I did not know until now is part of that is they guarantee you to cremate it at their expense and send you the remains within, I think, 3 years.
Oh, okay.
In my head, and I think this is part of my confusion, when I hear donate body science, obviously I know, you know, cadavers for medical testing and stuff like that, but in my head I also think... I think the FBI has the farm, and I think it's in Minnesota, where there's bodies put in like weird things so that they can forensically figure out what happens when a body's in a trunk in the swamp for three months or whatever.
Right.
And so in my head, I'm like, you know, you can't send that back until like later. But no.
If you cremated it.
But that's a different thing. Donated to science is a different thing. Apparently, it's a very specific deal. And apparently, in this case, part of the thing is one of the people... because they couldn't really afford, and they were like, this way we get free cremation.
Right, sure.
And the mother didn't have specific wishes in mind or whatever. So I find this all out.
Yeah.
And I found this interesting because I didn't know this.
Yeah.
And then I'm talking to Trish about it, who Trish was a speech pathologist. Her master's in speech pathology. So she dealt with cadavers for some of that stuff. And she said, yeah, in fact, schools every semester have a memorial service for the cadavers, and every student is invited, every student that participated, and the family members are invited.
Really?
Yes. And apparently, very few family members show up. Some do, but not many. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, they're across the country or whatever,
sure,
and
sure.
they had their own thing. But a lot of students do, because for a lot of them, they sort of have to process.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense to me, because I'm like, not only does everybody deal with death and dead bodies differently, like, in my lifetime, I think, like, in my adult lifetime, I think my reaction to a dead body would be different at different points.
Sure, sure.
Because how I feel about what that means,
sure,
and stuff like
right,
that.
Right.
And I've had very little experience with dead bodies. But, yeah, so I found that really interesting. Yeah, every semester they do a little memorial thing.
Well, in Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City, it's fairly famous cemetery for anyone who researches the paranormal, because the
Black Angel.
The Black Angel's there.
Although apparently Council Bluffs has a different Black Angel.
Oh, well, anyway.
It's easier to get to.
In Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City, where the Black Angel is, there is a specific memorial erected for... To memorialize people who have donated their body to science.
Cool.
There's a memorial there for that.
I think about it sometimes. I mean, I don't think about it too much anymore, because Trish has made it very clear that she's going to do whatever the hell she wants with my body.
Okay.
And I used to be really, like, bothered by that. And nowadays I'm like, eh. She loves me. So it's not like she's going to do something gross or weird with it. So I'm pretty fine with it. But, I mean, ultimately I just wanted to get cremated, because I'm like, it's the cheapest, it's the easiest. Takes up at least space.
Yeah, that, I used to feel that way. I think there's some environmental concerns about it. So some people are considering things like, there are some places that will, they can treat your body in a way that it, when it decomposes, it actually decomposes
yeah.
into things that are healthy for the environment,
well,
or whatever,
and
without, you know, formaldehyde or without.
Knitted coffins are a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
stuff like,
that's
stuff
become
like that.
The, yeah, well, and you don't have to embalm. I mean, that's.
That's yeah, that's right. That's
right. A lot of people don't want to do it. My dad is very big on that fact. And in fact, that was a big thing for him. He talked about it. He's like, I don't want any of that. He says, however, if you or your brother, because we're the two, my brother lives in Minnesota, I live here, the rest of the family's in Oregon.
Right.
He's like, if you need to, you know, see the body to have closure, I'm willing to get embalmed so that you can come and see it. And my brother said, don't need to. And I said, yeah. I said, whatever goodbyes I'm doing is going to have nothing to do with your corpse. So go ahead with whatever you want. Trish has very much said she wants to be buried so that she can rot. Like, she very much, the leaves of grass kind of thing.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Kind of the, my wife and I have thought the same thing. But that's, but see, here's another thing. My family has a plot in the Dallas Cemetery.
Hmm.
And which it's kind of weird, though, because there's one plot that belongs to our family. And not long ago, someone else was buried there. So we had to tell them, hey, this is our plot. And then they moved. So they moved the body.
Oh, so they did it on accident.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They like.
I thought you meant like somebody bought the space or something.
Well, they did.
But
they,
I mean.
They doubled
from you guys. I thought
oh,
they
double
booked.
Yeah, they
double
they double booked our space.
So
then they had to move the corpse to another place. Then they did it again.
Nice.
And I think in fact even right now there's a person buried there, and eventually they're going to have to move. This happens oddly. This happens to be the spot that has often been referred to as a spot that I'm going to be in. So my
he's got a roommate.
My spot will have been already used by
in.
Two people. but it that so there's
they took very good. They'll now, probably paint in between, I assume.
By the time though, of course, by the time I pass on, there's not going to be any pressure for me to be buried there necessarily.
Yeah.
But I still feel like, you know, even though probably nobody's going to expect me to actually use that spot, I do feel some pressure to like plan to use it. Like, well, everyone else is getting buried there, so you know nobody's going to care. We'll all be dead, but you know what I mean. It's
yeah.
weird that you feel this sort of obligation to be buried in
the
family plot.
Whereas we've got some, there is a family plot that my grandparents put together in Portland that has, among all the other, mine and Trish's names on it, and just doesn't have the death date yet or whatever.
Mm, okay.
And it's paid for. No way in hell either of us are ever getting buried there.
It'd be very expensive for you to be buried there.
Trish's parents have plot. No, but I mean, it's already done. Like,
yeah.
That's paid for, but we just don't want to and aren't going to.
Yeah.
Trish's parents have plots already for them in the family plot in Georgia, because my father-in-law technically was born there, But when he was very young, he moved to Virginia, and that's where they spent. He grew up, and like that's where they met. And now, and then they've spent their whole life in Illinois since they've been married. And Trish is like, I don't think they want to get buried there, but I don't care. I'm not burying them in Georgia, so that like none of us can visit them and whatever. That's terrible.
Well,
it's just all over the place. But yeah, our names are already on the stone in Portland.
The thing is, if you own a plot, you just own it.
Yeah.
And it. You know, my family...
So you could build, like, a tiny house there?
No. Someone could conceivably put a stone up there with my dates and everything.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I don't...
Yeah, yeah. No,
I don't have to actually be buried there.
I assume when we die, somebody will eventually... If somebody notifies them, they'll put in our death dates.
Yeah, and...
But we won't be there.
Yeah, nobody will realize you're not there. Yeah, it'll just be your dates are there.
Another story. I'm really going to be careful on this one. It involves a distant relation... in either mine or my wife's family. I am not going to say any more because this is not a flattering story.
Okay.
But there is a man married to a woman in one of our families. And they're very happily married. However, the woman was married before and lost her husband, and they were very much in love before he died, and much later she married this person, and there has always been issues of jealousy with the dead husband. And apparently it is to such a degree that after much effort, the woman has convinced her current husband to let her be buried by her old husband, and then he will be on the other side, so she'll be in between the two of them.
Okay.
But one of the conditions is that the currently alive husband will be, I think, 6 inches closer to her than the dead husband.
Well, can he even stipulate that?
Well, I mean, I don't know that they wrote it in a contract, but like they made that a deal.
That's weird.
You think? The whole thing I find amazing.
I'm fairly... I haven't asked my dad about this because it would be untoward to do so. But...
Untoward.
I do think that, you know, he's married now. And the woman he's married to was married for many years to a fella. And I have a feeling that when each one passes away, they'll be just simply buried with their,
original spouses. That is always a weird thing. And that was one of the first cracks in the concept of the afterlife. It's like, which spouse do you spend eternity with, you know?
I mean,
and some people I know, that's actually been a thing. People who genuinely believe in heaven, like on their second marriage, both have agreed, like, yeah, we love each other. Of course, in heaven, we'll be with our other spouses because they were our real ones, you know?
I mean, the reason I presume that is just because of certain other ways they've handled certain things.
Yeah.
Dad and his new wife are very much in love with each other. There's no question about that. But I just think they have a lot of respect for their previous marriage, respect for it. And it's like, no, I'm going to be buried here and you're going to be, you know, and they probably think that's unfortunate in a lot of ways, but it's appropriate. So
yeah.
I think that's probably what they're going to do.
Yeah. And I don't,
although, I mean, let's say they're still married, you know, 10, 15 years from now, which isn't impossible. Maybe they'll change their mind about that.
Yeah.
Which would be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I sure hope my dad doesn't think we have a preference on that kind of thing. That's up to him. But
could there be a joint custody thing where, like, every year you dig up the body and move it to...
Although, now that you mention...
I feel like that would be fun.
Now that you mention it, I mean...
Now that I mention it...
When you were talking about how this stone could have whatever on it...
Yeah, yeah.
He's already on the stone with my mom, so his dates could still be on there, and he could be buried somewhere else.
Absolutely.
That doesn't matter.
And... I'm not saying this is going to happen here, obviously, because I think you guys do different. But one of the upshots, cremation, you can split it. Half the ashes
that's
here.
True, that's true.
My grandmother, one of my grandmothers, my father's mother, had four different places she wanted her ashes scattered.
Oh.
And she had four children.
Oh.
And so they literally split the ashes. And for some of them, I've told this story before, it took a while till there was an opportunity to get to the place that they were in charge of digging. So she lived in a Ziploc bag on the mantelpiece on my house, and friends would come over, and I'd be like, "That's my grandma," and they'd be like, "You're making that up." I'm like, "Ask my parents." And my parents would go, "He's right. It is. It is, that is actually his grandmother's ashes." They're like, "Why is she there?" I'm like, "That's a story." And she was a horrible woman. I'm really amazed they went to that effort, but they did. You know, dying wish, all that jazz.
Yeah, I would definitely.
Because they weren't like easily like I think one of the places was Hawaii or some shit. Like it's not like.
It would have simple. To be. It would have to be either immoral or super unreasonable. But I would do it. I'd feel like I had to do it. Again, I'm not superstitious. I'm not thinking I'm going to get haunted. It's just the right thing to do.
My dying wish is you record this podcast on top of Everest.
I'm not listening to it because I know you're kidding.
With like Dealey Bobbers on. You can wear other
Dealey Bobbers, other clothes.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm not saying just Dealey Bobbers.
On the top of Everest.
No,
because
that's how it was
naked.
Starting. That's how it was with starting. Dealey I was going to be with like heart boxers. I'm like, he'll freeze to death. That's terrible. I'm like, no, you can wear like good club, but then Dealey Bobbers. Do you remember Dealey Bobbers?
Yes, I do. Of course I do.
Who the hell came up with the name Dealey Bobber?
I don't know.
I loved Dealey
Here's
Bobbers.
The thing I want to tell you about. So, and it kind of fits in with what we're talking about. So,
Dealey Bobbers?
No. As you know, I like gothic literature, especially the uncanny kind.
I am, in fact, familiar with this.
And I do especially like uncanny gothic 19th century stories that are set in America.
Mm-hmm.
I like those a lot. And there aren't very many, because even Edgar Allan Poe, when he writes what people call gothic stuff, it's sometimes not in America. I mean, it's set other lots of places.
Guatemala.
But Nathaniel Asian. Hawthorne's stuff that you can call uncanny gothic is set in America. And part of that's because one of his ancestors was one of the judges for the Salem witch trials.
Mm.
And I think Nathaniel Hawthorne felt a little guilty about that.
Yeah.
So some of the stuff he wrote was kind of in response to that. But anyway, when I read his short stories, I started to get this, and there's like 72 of them or some number like that. I started to get this notion of them all being connected in a shared universe.
Oh, no.
I know. Isn't that terrible?
Everything has to be in a shared universe.
And in particular, there were two stories, one called Dr. Heidegger's Experiment and one called The Birthmark. And in both of these, there's kind of almost a mad scientist character, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And
really, there's a mad scientist in Dr. Heidegger's Experiment? I never would have guessed.
But in Dr. Heidegger's Experiment, all you hear of his name is Dr. Heidegger.
Yes.
And in The Birthmark, all you hear of that guy's name is his first name. So they could be the same guy, right? And you're like, oh, wait, what if these are the same guy? You know, and suddenly I'm getting all these interesting, and then I've read some of his other stories, and I'm thinking, oh, it could be connected like this. So now...
Jim Hawkins changed his name because Heidegger sounded too Jewish.
So now I've got this idea in my head that I'll write these stories about this guy. I forget the first name because it was unusual, but Dr. Such and Such Heidegger, who's like an alchemist and all this stuff, maybe he's lived for hundreds of years, and somehow he's either directly or indirectly involved in every single story that Nathaniel Hawthorne ever wrote. And it's like, I'll write stories about him, but little hints from the other stories will come into it. And I'm kind of excited about it, but I'm also like, why am I thinking about stuff like this? I've got too many things I'm working on.
Stephen King claims all of his stuff is the shared universe, and he works really hard to try and tie that stuff in.
Well, you know, another thing is, so...
Well, of course, the Dark Tower series is sort of what makes that work.
So this got me thinking about the whole genre of what I call American Gothic.
Mm.
And I have read some...
Good TV show.
I have read some Lovecraft in recent weeks, and it's very good.
As long as you avoid the racism, it's very good.
Yes. As long as you avoid the racism, it's very good. But it I find that, and this is true for a lot of King's stuff as well, I'm thinking, even though I've never read his books entirely, the little pieces I've gotten, it's like, this really seems familiar, that Nathaniel Hawthorne really kind of built the foundation for this kind of fiction. And then I started to think, you know what, there's just about every element of American Gothic literature you can think of was present at the witch trials, because a lot of American Gothic includes like frontier stuff, like being isolated on the frontier and people going crazy. Any kind of interaction with Indians or Indian lore, anything that involves slaves, any early American stuff, obviously, with where, you know, people are having trouble surviving and things like that. and also religious fanaticism is always a part. So it's like, wow, it's like all happened, all that stuff kind of happened there. And then I thought, you know what, the very first, okay, America obviously starts in, everyone knows, 1776, but Americans usually think of the story of America going further back than that, even though technically it's not America yet.
Yeah.
So you get the Pilgrim story as part of America, but also Jamestown is part of America, but also Roanoke and the Lost Colony is part of America. And that is, so that means the very first American story really is about the Lost Colony of Roanoke. So the very first American story is an American Gothic story. And I did never thought about that before. It's like, wow. And when I read, one of the things I like to do when I visit a place is sometime in the 19th century, just about every county, at least in the West, and by the West, I mean west of the Mississippi, including Iowa, but I think some of them in the East did this too, had stories. Each county had someone who wrote a history of that county.
Oh, yeah.
And in just about all of those histories, there's some mysterious murder happened. There's something that happened that's the basis of a ghost story.
Yeah.
So it's like, people have been telling these stories, you know, white people, I guess I should say, since they got here. And it's like the foundation of all of American myth is very Gothic and creepy Gothic. You know what I mean? Like horror is like at the foundation of it all.
Well, when life's cheap, you tell a lot of horror stories. And in a frontier situation, life's very cheap.
I suppose so.
In Assassin's Creed 3, which is the one that's set in colonial America, there is a set of side quests that involve you basically investigating paranormal things. Like, there's somebody who's trying to learn about these, and they send you on all these things. And every single one is, you debunk it, like you find out, no, it's actually this or whatever. Yeah. Except like the last one, and I can't remember the last one exactly, but it ends with you basically being like, what just happened? And like, that's the end of the adventure, because you don't understand what it was. I'm surprised you haven't, and maybe you have, but I would recommend, it's not in the era, but I mean, I think it's in the genre, and it's the first story I've read like this, and I don't remember the author. But the story title is The Funeral of Jean Grey, Uncanny X-Men, which I think is very much in that genre for you. That was the first comic book I ever read.
But it
was a really good one to read.
But that gets me thinking about all kinds of other things, like, you know, the United States could never have been, probably, well, I take that back. It could have been without slavery. But it couldn't have been the way it was without slavery.
Well, no, of course not.
And
slavery had a very large cultural impact.
Well, and also when you read the early accounts, before slavery proper in the colonies, there was indentured servitude African people. And until that happened, there was a lot of economic struggle. But then when they had people working for free, that's one of the things that got the economy going. But not just that, there is no way Britain could have gotten a colonial foothold if a lot of people native to North America hadn't been thinned out by disease that nobody even realized that was happening. I mean, even the native people going through it didn't realize that was what was happening.
And we all like to talk about, you know, it's the disease because the white men brought diseases that weren't familiar. But actually, a major plague had run through, I think, the Iroquois nations shortly before white settlers showed up.
Sure.
And so they had already been decimated. And there's a lot of argument that, like, things would have gone very differently if that unrelated thing hadn't happened just before.
So all of these dark things are right at the roots. And really, the Salem witch trials are the birthplace of American horror.
Yeah.
It's not the first thing that happened. I mean, because there was the Roanoke thing, but
it is the wellspring.
Yeah. And that's the thing that inspired Nathaniel Hawthorne, which went on to inspire a lot of other people, including Lovecraft, and which eventually inspired Stephen King and Shirley Jackson.
And so every hack nowadays.
Yeah. It's like, and you know, these are things I've known about history, but suddenly there were a bunch of connections that I didn't realize really before how profound and deep they were. And it's kind of interesting. And so then when I get this idea for this story, it's like, oh, wow, I can participate in this way. But it's like, why would I want to do that? I've got too many things I'm working on right now, but I'm actually, I'm very excited about
that
it.
That is tricky, and I have that a lot. I'm like, I want to do this. Oh, next week I want to do that.
It's too much.
Finish a thing.
Yeah, and finish then go a to thing. The next That's thing. Right. That's you really do have
or
to do that.
Or Blades and Fallout 4. You know, whatever. Let's add something.
Oh, okay.
Oh, by the way, for those of you, it is Thanksgiving now, which also means today is the day Netflix releases the next new season of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, okay.
So
well.
Get on that. Next week, I will probably be watching one of them because I'm very excited.
As your talent wants to know.
Okay.
Hats of the Magical Talking Hat Pod. Oh, I'm sorry, hats. Hosts of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. Sorry, Azurtalon, I read it wrong. He wants to know, how's your week really been? I'm pretty honest about how my weeks have been, so.
Has it been?
And this week?
Well, I mean,
haven't even lived this week
yet.
Yeah,
no, we don't. How will it be? But I mean, the week from before, I guess. I mean, like.
It's fine. It's good.
This has been a very long week. Work has had some mixed things. I make a point of the few news sources I have, I don't bother with them on the weekend.
That's probably a good thing.
But it always means that Monday
can be a real drag.
Is depressing.
Yeah.
Because the world just comes back in. And so that's always a little rough, but I don't know. This week has been okay. It's been very long. We didn't do date night because we're going to do it this weekend, a.k.a. last weekend.
Actually, it's funny that he should ask this because just today, this would be a week ago for the rest of you, just today.
I love that we really don't think they can handle this concept for more than like 5 seconds. We're always like...
Just today I was thinking about, but... What I'm about to talk about, it's appropriate for Thanksgiving, what I'm about to talk about, even though I wasn't thinking about it because of Thanksgiving. I just happened to be thinking about it the week before Thanksgiving.
I'll be the judge of that.
How insanely fortunate I've been really through my whole life. I mean, I've had struggles. I've had things that really sort of, you know, hurt me deeply or really, you know, wiped me out. But nothing that ever I thought I wasn't going to get through.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that I didn't get through. And it, you know, this is something I've realized my whole life. Even when I was very young, I would look around and go, man, why am I so lucky? You know, there's so many other people who are poorer than me or who, you know, we were raised with some fair, you know, to know that people who weren't, who didn't look like us had a harder time than we had. You know, mm-hmm. That's something that we were taught in terms of social consciousness in my family. So I knew about that. I knew that there were, I had, by the time I was in high school, I had friends who had had cancer and who knew they weren't going to live through their 20s. I knew that what they were going through. In fact, one guy was a very close friend of mine, and when he was in his 20s, I went to his house and had my last conversation with him because he did pass away before he was 30. So I just, you know, all of this stuff. And this always happens. Whenever I have an episode like this where I'm like, I can't believe how lucky I am with all the stuff that's gone good in my life, I almost immediately feel like almost a survivor's remorse right after it. Like, why am I ever upset or sad or angry?
This is you know? The thing I get.
Why do I even get upset about things when everything for me is so much easier than for everybody
else?
Yeah,
this is like when you go, and I have a friend who... I used to see more often, but we try. And so I go out, I'm like, you know, we'll do lunch this weekend. We go and we have lunch. She's telling me about her life. And, you know, she's happy and she's working. But, like, she's really poor. And she's got she's got a kid who has a kid without, you know, being married and all that. And the living situations, if they have very little money, there's a lot of things that are very hard for them. And this is where you're supposed to be like, oh, you realize your own blessings. No, I realize... I'm a loser because like I'm like depressed or anxious or freaked out and I have no problems.
See, that's how I feel.
And I'm like,
that's how I feel.
If I for a second had to live her life, I'd just flip and kill myself.
Yeah.
Not because like I'm that weak, like, because I've never really had to face any adversity.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing. I start to feel really bad. I'm just like, man, I'm a, and it's also very much a, straight white males are wusses.
Well, because we've talked about that. We've talked about how privilege actually harms a person because they never really understand their own limits. They never understand what it's like to survive something difficult. Or I shouldn't say
and
never.
And we're always the ones who want to do things on principle. The white males are always the ones defending freedom of speech.
Yeah, right.
And what they're actually defending is, I want to say something shitty and not suffer consequences for it. And it's because... that's also why white people are the ones who will argue with cops.
Yeah.
Because what are we risking?
Yeah, right, right.
At worst, we go to jail and maybe pay a fine, but even possibly, because we're that deluded, we get a lawyer and sue them for false arrest or whatever like that.
Now,
there's never any other concern.
Of course, there are also other white people, white males who have a harder time in life.
Absolutely. And,
especially
and
if they're poorer than me.
That's the thing. The money's like so many decisions I make based on money. I'm like, well, yeah, because you can afford to make those decisions.
Yep.
Like, I'm a good tipper. And I get a little smug about that. I'm kind of proud of how good. And I'm like, yeah, you can afford to.
Yeah, right. So it's like,
what if you couldn't afford to?
I mean, I'm just.
Like, those people aren't cheap. They're poor. Like, that's a different thing.
So just every once in a while, and today was one of those times where I'm in a good mood, for example, and I'm thinking about things that are going well. And then I start thinking about how, 90% of the time things are going well for your whole life.
Yeah.
90% of the time things are going, and the 10% where it's not going well, it's things that everyone has to go through. Like your mom died.
But meanwhile, you're not content and happy 90% of the time.
That's right. Well, it doesn't feel like I am. And it's why am I, certainly.
Do I ever feel bad for myself?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when my mom passed away, of course I'm going to feel bad about that. But there are times that I'm depressed, like super depressed, not suicidal or anything, but more depressed than really I have a right to be, honestly, for all the things that have ever, good things that have ever happened to me and how the bad things have never been things that are going to, I mean, there are people who have bad things happen to them. There's a possibility they won't survive it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I've never experienced something like that.
Yeah.
Bad, but never that bad. And I may never experience anything like that. And it's like, man, it's just not even fair that I can have such a great life. And there are other people who have great lives. It's not just me.
Yeah, and there are people who have better lives.
And there are people that have better lives. But I guess for me, even if everyone had a life as cool as I did and only one person didn't, I would think that was terrible. I would think that was a huge injustice. But it's more than one person. It's lots of people. And sometimes it's based on their color of their skin or their orientation or their sex, and that's
or
so
incredibly
awful.
Random chance, which on the one hand you're like, well, it's not discriminatory at least, but I'm like,
no, it's still,
but also it sucks, like just a random
still
cosmic
awful.
Coincidence.
Yeah, still awful, because it's only a random cosmic coincidence that it just hasn't happened to me.
Absolutely.
So, and like I said, I had a friend who got cancer, and I remember when I went over to his house, it's so weird to go over to someone's house and you know it's the last time you're ever going to talk to him.
I can't imagine. I've had a phone call like that
and
once.
I mean, that was a really hard thing to, it's like, you don't say, see you later. You don't, you have to say really goodbye, like for real. And he was,
there's an episode of BoJack Horseman about that.
He was he was fine. He was at peace with it. And I'm like, I just can't. And then of course his family had to cope with losing their son.
That would be weird if it was a peer, because the one time I had it was my aunt, who had a good hand in raising me, and so a lot of it was just talking about childhood memories and like thanking her for that stuff, and we both start crying and things. I think it'd be stranger if it's just like a person, a friend.
Oh yeah, we were friends. We'd written music together, and performed music.
It's weirder,
together. We went to his funeral, and there were a lot of people that he did. He went to Chicago, and he was in the jazz scene there for a long time. So people came and played jazz at his funeral.
Okay, guys, if I die before all the rest of you all, whatever memorial you have, make sure it's funny. If it's not funny, what's the point?
I'm not worried
about being offended. I'll be dead.
I've been to funerals where people told funny stories.
Oh yeah, you got it.
And you've got to.
Well, and especially, I love the ones where it's somebody who was, like, I literally went to the funeral of somebody who was 108. Mm. Like, nobody was sad. Well, it was a family reunion. Sure, yeah. We told stories, and we, and it was a lot of, oh, you get to meet this person. Yeah, and, yeah, da, 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 da. And I love those. Like, it's just a great excuse for him. Meanwhile, the funeral in Haunting of Hill House, not a good one. I would not like to have attended that one.
So, yeah, he's asking this question on an odd day for me because, again, I have these days every once in a while. And at first I'm like, you know, my life's pretty great. And like I said, right after that, I'm like, why isn't everyone's life this great? It's not fair. Because a lot of times the people whose lives aren't, like you said, sometimes it's just random chance. But for a lot of people, it's not. For a lot of people, there's no reason they shouldn't have a life as good or better than mine. And they don't for no good reason. And that makes me so angry. Yeah. I have to admit to you, it makes me furious when I think about that.
And it gets so weird, though, because there's also reasons why people have good lives or bad lives that are related to their personalities and their efforts and their outlooks. But then, so then it's all mixed together. Yeah. So then this person's life is because of circumstances, because of outside things they could not have control over, because of random cosmic chance, and because of their attitude and effort. And it's particularly good or it's particularly bad. And it's so hard. That's when you get this concept of being deserving. It's like, how do you ever measure that?
Yeah.
And we like to try in our head. There are people out there who are successful that I think are dicks. And I'm like, they don't deserve that. But then there are people out there who are successful that I think are wonderful. They might also not deserve that. And the people who are dicks might deserve it. And then maybe there's people whose hard life. And I have the thing. I have this with kids. When kids are awful and awful in ways that I'm not used to, like that I wasn't or that my nieces and nephews aren't, my brain wants to say the parents are doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's 100%, like, that is one of so many factors involved.
Sure, yeah.
But my brain just wants to do that because we want to place them. And that's why people, when you have this argument about racism and things like that, I'm always, my big thing is always, racism second, I'm like, the numbers back this up.
Oh,
like,
yeah, right.
The statistics say, and the only way you can fight those statistics is the argument to say, well, yeah, that's just evidence that blacks aren't as smart, or that's just evidence that women are weaker, or whatever. And I'm like,
and that's not true.
No.
That
and,
can't
and
be
because
true.
There are so many factors.
That's right.
And also, there's just demonstrable evidence to the contrary
absolutely.
But that drives me nuts because that's the only two arguments. If you say, no, racism's not really that much of a thing, either you're not looking at the numbers or you're a real shithead.
Yeah. The thing that I think has made me so lucky, though, is like, you know, my family. I think they're genuinely awesome people, and I'm very lucky to be in that family, but also all the people that I grew up around. And then when I, living here, you know, meeting you, meeting my wife, you know, having a chance to be a father to her kids, Jazz, and some of the other people that listen.
Our Hatters. We love our Hatters. We're so lucky to have
our
Hatters.
And the people I met at Applied beside you, like Mark, you know, who listens, and your wife. I've just been so lucky.
You said that in such a way that it was like all these great people at Applied, except you.
No, including
I know what you meant, but that's how it sounded, and it amused me.
But, I mean, I have just known some of the most awesome people ever. That's no joke. And I don't know how I got so lucky. But one thing that you find if you know someone who's been through a lot of bad stuff, they also know a bunch of awesome people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what that keeps them going. So, you know, I'm not the only one blessed that way, but
it
I'm
is
just
weird.
Really blessed.
When I was in college, I learned a lot about myself.
Yeah, as most people do when they're in college.
And that was when I came to terms with my sexuality and came to terms with the time, my faith, and things like that. And so I would hang out with these people, and I would hear stories about coming out as gay, coming out as bi, and coming out as pagan, because that's a thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a thing, sure.
And my story for both of those is, I told my parents, and they were like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And they asked some questions, and we talked about it occasionally, but, like, that's fine. Like, there was not, and I always felt so weird about it, because I'm like, no one disowned me. No one was even mad. I mean, my parents weren't super savvy in dealing with a bisexual.
Okay, sure.
There were some really awkward attempts for my dad to sort of bond that were the sweetest things, but just so weird.
Yeah.
But he was clearly trying and stuff like that. And the pagan stuff, I think they got more into the pagan stuff than I did. They definitely are more into it now. And it was just nothing. And I always felt so strange about that.
But you were very, you were lucky that way.
Oh, yeah. No. And it, but it's a perspective thing. I grew up thinking I had a perfect family. When I got older, I learned there's some terrible things that happened in my family.
Yeah, I don't think I ever thought I had a perfect family. But
I always was just like, our family has it together so much better than.
Oh, and things I'd see you all learned these later. Other things. Oh, okay.
And then I learned, no, there was some fucked up shit in my family's past. Sure. Just most of it, I either hadn't been born yet or I was too young. So it's the same. It's like everybody's got shit in their family, but still can think their family's really cool.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And I don't know, I just got circular. I'm like, I don't know what there's a point to that.
Well,
but.
I think one of the most important things, that one of the most important values to foster in your life is gratitude. I don't think anyone should feel like, you know, you were talking about people deserving things. I don't think anyone should feel like they're owed anything or they deserve anything or whatever. I mean, I don't think a person should think it's okay for people to walk all over them.
No.
But I don't.
You are no more or no less important
than
anyone else.
And so all the stuff I've gotten in my life, I don't feel like I got because I deserved it. I just got it. And I am so grateful for it. And I've always been that way because that's how I was taught to be when I was young. And we did charity stuff, you know, because we went to the Methodist Church there in Knoxville. And you got this sense of, hey, if you've got more than somebody else, well, then you share. I mean, that's just the logical thing to do. It's not even really an obligation. It's just, duh, of course you do that. And so I've always had that kind of mindset. But of course, as I've gotten older, I've realized just how much injustice there is, you know, just how hard it is to take whatever excess or privilege you think you have and help somebody else with it. How many blocks there are in society even to do that.
And how complicated it is if you're one of a few people doing it and so many things are not doing it. And it's like, where do you start? Who do you pick? How do you trust who you do it with?
It's insane. And it can drive you nuts. But I think it's still important for people to feel a sense of gratitude for the things they have. And even to feel gratitude for things that challenge you. Because especially if you're a privileged person like me, that might be the only chance you get to improve yourself, because the world won't challenge you any other way.
Yeah.
And to be grateful for those challenges and for the good things they bring you to, you know, make you a better person, if only because now you're aware just a tiny piece of what other people have to deal with every day that you only have to deal with once in a while.
Having been raised with tremendous privilege, like we've discussed in a variety of levels, and tremendous support from my family.
Yeah.
I have quite an ego. And I've always sort of had that. And then as I got older, I realized, you know, that's, you know, pump the brakes on that a little bit. And so I've become sort of self-deprecating in a lot of ways. And so it is only in very recent years that I have sort of been working on acknowledging and being okay with admitting specific things that I feel are my strengths or that I am good at. And that's the thing. Not just I'm awesome, but also not just like I suck. And it was always jokingly, but I've always been very sort of jokingly self-deprecating. And I've tried to work more on like, you know what? I actually have a talent for this.
Yes,
I'm actually good at this and things like that. But very much tied to that, and that I always know is there's any success I have, I never claim particular like credit. I mean, I can say I did a thing well, but it's like, oh, like if I become a successful author, I'm not gonna be like, yeah, it's just because I'm so good
and you're a self-made
book
man.
Writing. I'm like, so I've had so much luck and so much support and so much privilege, and just, I mean, so many factors that I didn't control did I have talent? If I was successful, then probably some.
Yes, right.
But there's lots of people with talent who couldn't have pulled this off.
That's right, that's right.
Because they didn't have that kind of stuff. And I'm never going to feel like I've earned this.
Or that it's all just you.
Yeah.
Yep, right.
And that's a very important position. Right. And it's harder for me now because of that exact thing. I'm like, I'm trying to be good to myself and be like, you know what? You are good at this.
That's right.
But at the same time, you have to be like, but that's... You don't get there by yourself.
That's right.
Ever.
That's right. Never. You're absolutely correct. Absolutely.
And now we got to finish up. So, I'll gather the family around for our final farewell here for the evening, and you go have pie after this and watch some Mystery Science Theater. And remember, I think the main takeaway you can get from this whole thing is you're not special.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.